Hello, everyone. Welcome to the newest episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast by Literal Humans. I am Paul David, co-founder and CEO of Literal Humans, and very excited to be joined today by Joseph Ifeigbu, the co-founder and CEO at Equitable. Welcome to the pod, Joseph.
Thank you so much, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Big fan of the name Joseph. My brother's name is Joe, so hopefully we can get along better than me and my brother do on this call.
That's awesome.
First of all, we like to start out every episode with, you know, just a little bit of light reporting on the tech sector and tech for good sector. Obviously, we'll get more into this later. Your company is focused on HR tech and HR analytics. One of the headlines that I saw recently came to us from our partners over at Sifted about, you know, kind of the rise of future of work unicorns and you know, companies that are just really take advantage. And I'll drop a link there for you if you want to take a look at it. You know, companies that are really taking advantage of the trend over the past few years, especially coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic, of, you know, distributed workforces, hiring employees across borders, and also trying to maintain company culture outside of the office. The piece talks about Staffbase, which is a German employee communications platform. They just raised a $60 million Series A round in March. We'd be curious to hear, like, you know, what are you seeing, especially in the realm of future of work and you know, the rise of just the popularity of that as a trend?
You know, it's we always like to say at our company that some of the things that we are currently seeing are things that were going to happen anyways. I think, you know, just over the last few years, with everything that's happened, it just brought certain things sooner than it would have been, right? But, you know, you've seen things around, like, companies thinking more about employee engagement, employee satisfaction, more. You've seen companies, you know, thinking about, like, okay, well, what about this 4-day work week? There's a lot of things that are currently happening, right? How do we maintain workplace culture or the culture of the organization when you have this remote world? So these are things that, like, already companies should have been already thinking about, but it's just, you know, because of what has happened over the last few years, it's, you know, brought it sooner. But my thoughts, I think my thoughts is it's exciting to really see what's happening. I think it's been interesting because, on one side, you know, there's this panic about, oh my gosh, there's the great migration, great resume, all of that. You know, there's so many names for it now. And on the other side, you have companies saying, okay, well, look, the way we've worked, the way we used to work over the last few years has changed. And so we need to figure out new ways to adapt to it. And then you have some people holding on to the past and saying, no, everyone needs to come back to the office. And it's like, oh, come on. Like, we've proven over the last couple of years, people can actually get their work for the jobs that you can do remotely. People can actually get their work done and do it well remotely. So naturally, in order to remain competitive in this current day and age in terms of getting talent, you have to be open to, like, new ways of working. And those new ways of working means, like, okay, well, you're gonna have to, you know, hire people from all around the world, you're gonna have to be remote, and then you're gonna have to figure out ways to, you know, maintain culture in a different way, but maintain it now with that remote world. It's harder because, you know, you're not seeing people every day. However, it's something that companies should be thinking about now. So I'm excited about it. I've gotten used to working from home now. Our company is fully remote. We have people in Africa. We have people here in the US. And so, I mean, I think it's going to keep. I don't think it's always going to. I think it's going to. It's not going to go back to fully being in the office. I don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And you. This is. I mean, some good points there, Joseph. You touched on a couple of things that I think a lot of companies are struggling with. We're struggling with it. We're struggling. I say we're working through it. I should put it in a more positive sense. We're, you know, getting ready to move to a 4-day work week. We're figuring out how to collaborate, you know, working from home digitally and things like that. Figuring out how to, you know, we just had a team lunch for Cinco de Mayo. I think that's why I have this shirt on right now. Trying to be very Cinco de Mayo vibe. But, you know, just, like, maintain culture, keep people happy, keep people, you know, productive, but also keep people sane and supported, you know, I think is important there. Question for you is, I guess, what, you know, we've seen this. We have, like, 4, maybe, you know, maybe 5 over our life cycle the past 2 years, HR tech clients. Why is HR tech so hot right now? Like, what do you think is, yeah, what do you think is behind the trend?
No, I think it's about time, to be honest, right? So if you look at analytics as a whole, you realize, like, things around, like, if you look at product analytics, sports, health, you know, marketing, I mean, these branches of analytics are way, way, way ahead of HR. Like, HR for the longest time has just been like, we do this a certain way. This is what it is. We use our gut feelings to make decisions. And this is how we've always done things. I mean, it was hard to bring innovation to that world, right? People used one massive tool for everything, and that was what it was, right? And so over the last few years, there has been new schools of thought, right? In terms of, no, work is changing. Employee experience should be different, right? How we think about compensation should be different. Like, I mean, I think people are challenging, have been for the last few years, really challenging the norm. And so with those challenges and those new schools of thought come new ways of doing things and new products to rise up to those challenges, right? And so if you're saying, hey, before, for example, employee engagement survey was once a year, but you have new ways of thinking that says, hey, no, it should be a continuous listening, right? Then naturally what ends up happening is you're going to see new tools come to the market to say, hey, we are actually delivering on that continuous listening strategy, right? So there's not been this shift from like, okay, this is the way we worked to no, employee experience is more important, more than ever. And so because of that change in the way employees think about work and employees think about the value of work and employees think about like, hey, look, if I'm coming to work, I need to make sure that my own values align with the company's values. Because of all those changes, there's become this new kind of way of thinking around just work in general. And then because of that, like new tools. And it's about time because like for us to get to a place whereby we are like, you know, in line with the product analytics and all this market analytics and things like that, there has to be an expansion of innovation first before it contracts. That's the nature of innovation. It expands before it contracts, right? And so for us to get to that place whereby technology is really supporting the work that we do in HR, there has to be that expansion. And that's kind of why you're seeing that today. And it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, I mean, well, now it's probably a good time to ask you to explain our audience what Equitable is and why, you know, why you started it, what's been your co-founder journey, and yeah, how does it fit within everything you just said in terms of, you know, sort of about time for a product like Equitable and just what your mission is?
Yeah. So, you know, like, yeah, over the last few years, we've seen the shift from like this centralized model for products who are decentralized, right? Whereby, you know, back in the day, everyone used Oracle or ADP or, you know, like some of those big time products. And they use that for everything, right? And over the last few years, people were moved to say, hey, look, we want to use the best in class for different things. And so now you see companies use, you know, similar stacks, but like things like, okay, you know, they use like, let's say a Workday for HRIS, and they use like a Greenhouse for an ATS, and they use like a Lattice for performance. And then they use like, it just keeps going on and on like that. And so if you look at that, like companies end up having 4, 5, 6, 7 different systems that they use in their day-to-day work. Okay, yes. So you solve the problem of best in class, but what ends up happening is you've now introduced a new problem, which is data silos, right? Because all the systems have their own data. And so, you know, during my time at WeWork, I was at WeWork for about 3 years, myself and my current co-founder, we built and grew the team there. And I went to Snapchat, and then I was there for about a year leading the HR technology team. And what I saw during my time there was this issue. I saw, you know, during the time at WeWork, we had so many systems. We built the integrations, the pipeline to connect all those systems and bring that data into one place and tell a story, right? And so I started to think about it. And we were like, well, if we are having this problem, then every other company must be having the same issue. Right. And so we started having conversations with organizations, with people, with friends and colleagues in the industry. And we saw this was a prevalent problem. Like this was a problem that was just like, wasn't going to go away. And so we said, wow, like this might be an opportunity to create a platform that connects to the different HR systems, brings everything into one place and delivers, makes it easy for people to access analytics about their employees. And that's what we built at Equitable. That's simply what we built. Equitable is a HR analytics platform that connects to different HR sources, brings in the data and delivers analytics and insights to organizations so that they can make data-driven people decisions. That's simply what we do.
I love the data-driven focus. I love too, when you go to the Equitable website, you talk about like, you know, the different uses of it, right? So understand your company's growth, understand its engagement, understand its DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Understand its attrition, I think, is really important. I'd be curious to get your perspective on you know, particularly conversations around DEI. We just put out a piece on Sifted as well about hiring for DEI. But sort of, I feel like we've had to convince people that HR tech is tech for good, right? That like reducing mental health issues that people face in the workplace or increasing their happiness in the workplace. Like, to me, that's just inherent that that's tech for good. So I'd be curious to get your perspective on where, you know, HR tech sits in the tech for good world, why maybe it should or shouldn't be tech for good, and just like, you know, its implications in that space.
Yeah, I think people analytics, HR technology, I mean, the goal should be to help make the employee journey and experience as good as possible. That's really for us what we building this for, right? Like, we want to make sure that, like, if you're making decisions about employees, then you're using data. You're making an informed decision as possible. That's literally why we view this. And so I feel like, you know, yeah, like, I think HR tech or people analytics, I think sits squarely in that, right? I think if anyone's building people analytics, not for that, I can't even see how it's not, right? Because everyone I speak to that are building, other CEOs and other founders that are building HR technology products, when I speak, have conversations with them, they're like, we want to create this to improve the employee experience. And I can see how sometimes, like, people can be like hesitant and like, oh, no, because it's data. You're dealing with people's data, right? A lot of times you're dealing with PII. And so I think as much as we have that goal in our day-to-day, we need to also make sure that we're being careful, that we're being thoughtful in terms of security, we're being thoughtful in terms of how we use data. If we say we're going to use the data to do X, make sure that's what we use the data to do and not anything else. And I think that's one of the things that we did very well, like, in our organization. It's like at Snapchat. Like, I remember, like, the legal team would come to us and when we have that data, we've collected this data and they said, okay, what are you using that data for? We collected this survey data. We're going to use to do this analysis and we're going to share this results. And then that was only the thing we used the data for. So I think communicating what you use the data for, make sure people are aware of what the data is being used for. And then following through on if you find errors and find issues within the organization, following through on what you said you're going to do. Because if you run a survey and you see issues and then you don't rectify that, and then you ask people the next time, the next year, the next month to do another survey, people are going to be like, what the heck? Why am I doing? Because I didn't see any results from the last one. Nothing was done about what we mentioned about our grievances. So why should we keep doing this? So I feel like HR tech can be for good, but you also have to add communication to that. You also have to be cognizant. You have to be at security. You have to be thoughtful about how you use it.
Yeah. I think you hit on a point that we see a lot in just tech in general, is like, you know, all the gadgets and the, you know, systems are great, but like, really have to think about how they interact with the people, the humans. I mean, sort of why we've named our company Literal Humans is like, you know, just encouraging ourselves to be a bit more thoughtful about that stuff in the tech space. And I think, yeah, like, companies like yours are giving people the tools to do that, you know, by looking at the data and then operationalizing it and connecting it to systems that deal with people every single day. I guess I'd be curious, like, you've got a really impressive resume. I mean, you're a co-founder, you've worked at Snapchat, you've worked at WeWork. I'd be curious, like, what you've seen over the course of those experiences. Like, what are some of the best applications of HR tech that maybe you've seen at Snap, at WeWork, you know, maybe with some of your clients at Equitable? Just curious, like, what are the bright spots out there?
I mean, there's quite a few, but one of the ones that I've seen that I really just appreciate is one that has to do with compensation, right? That we've done, right? I think a lot of times what we, you know, you see companies that are growing pretty fast. And a lot of times they haven't set up the right structures in terms of how you pay people and how you communicate that pay and things like that, you know. And then what that ends up causing is disparity in pay. And oftentimes it could affect women, if it could affect people of color, you know, just things like that. And in a lot of cases, it's not necessarily because someone is like on purpose doing that. It's just because you don't have the structures in place to ensure that people are paid fairly. All right. And then you end up having that disparity. And one of the big things I've seen people analytics do over my career so far is like some of the work around that pay structure, pay comp, like the compensations, you know, compensation bands and all of that. And and just seeing what it's done for people's morale, realizing, oh, yes, thank you. Like I am seen, like, oh yeah, the work I'm doing matters, and you see it and you're paying me appropriately for it. Because I've seen the opposite. Because in one of the companies I worked for a while back, they released a comp survey whereby it's like everyone got like a report as to where you felt in the comp band, right? So if you are one, then you are paid squarely like average, like basically right in the middle. I was 0.95. I wasn't happy. So I was paid like $5,000 less than the average. And I was like, what? Like, you know, I'm considering like kind of the value I knew I was bringing and what I was told I was bringing. But when you look at the money, show me the money then, right? Like, why is it not reflecting? But in my own, as I was thinking about that, a friend of mine, this black lady who was a brilliant engineer, comes by my desk and she's in tears. And she was paid 0.60. So she was 40% from the average. So she was paid way less than, she left the company 2 weeks after to someone else that was going to pay her more. And so when I saw that, I was like, and we lost one of the best engineers we had. She was brilliant. And then, seeing that happen, right? You're like, wow, like that's, and this was before I jumped HR analytics. I was working at a different company then, and I saw that. And so when I ended up joining HR analytics, and over the years, seeing how the other side of it, whereby, you know, people, we do this comp strategies, and then we release stuff, and then we adjust salaries so that way people, and seeing kind of what it does for them, I was like, this is how people should feel. People should feel like you see them. People should feel like, yes, they are getting paid for the work that they do. I am fairly. And companies should communicate that. So that's one of the things that I've seen that has been incredible for people analytics. And I feel like we should keep doing things like that.
That's a great story. I mean, we love those human-centric narrative stories about like, look, there's this tech tool, but like, here's how it operated at the people level. This is the person it affected. I think that's a really powerful, powerful story you just told there. Be curious if you have any similar stories, you know, about work you've done with your clients at Equitable, any like great case studies or examples of how you've, you know, helped them through great HR analytics, like transform maybe some HR processes.
Yeah, for sure. One of our large customers, they had a hiring goal to use, you know, just example number, which we're going to hit 500 people, 500 hires last year. At the beginning of the year, like, you know, 2-3 months into the year, they were not even anywhere close to the goals. Like they were tracking behind the goals. And naturally, like you just couldn't understand why that was happening. Equitable, basically, we had conversations with them, and you know, we signed up and connected to their systems. We got their data, and you know, after a couple of weeks, it became clear what the issue was. Like they looked at the platform, and we showed them, like, here's why you're not hitting your hiring goals. And by the way, you're not going to hit your hiring goals if you keep going like this. There were two issues. One, the time between when the recruiter finished talking to the candidate and when they booked a time for the hiring manager interview was like 45 days. It was so long. Now, people are hiring within like, what, 30 days these days? People end-to-end, done. So if in a very competitive space, you're taking about a month to a month and a half to schedule time between two stages, people are going to drop out of that stage, qualified candidates. So we saw that qualified candidates were just dropping out of that stage. So of course, you're not going to hit your goals if you're losing time. That was the first thing. And then the second thing was the number of recruiters that they had to the number of jobs wasn't, right? Because in the prior years, the ratio, let's say the ratio was something like, maybe prior years like 1-3, one recruiter to maybe three roles, just for lack of, and then this year was something like 1-8, like it moved. And it's like, okay, well, like you can see like there, of course, people are going to be dropping out because there's so many things that they're dealing with a lot more, like over double the volume. And then between trying to schedule meetings and then you have double the volume, you're going to end up missing out a lot. So you have to kind of reduce that ratio, one, and then you have to also reduce the time between the stages. And so they implemented, obviously they wanted to plan to hire, but also they implemented like a whole strategy around an operation strategy around that. So that way, once the recruiter is done talking, they are booking. And then they make sure that the hiring manager is also held responsible. If you have to talk to a candidate, you shouldn't wait in a month. You should find time to talk with that candidate within a week. Why wait a month, right? Stuff like that. And so once they did that, immediately we saw an immediate change. Like within the same month, like they just started hitting. And then, yeah, I mean, they hit the hiring goals and then some last year. that's one of the exciting things that we saw, like Equitable could help companies do.
That's another really cool example. I mean, HR, like, it's so pervasive, right? Literally touches every part of the organization, every part of the company. So, you know, there's almost no limit to maybe the problems that you can help them solve, like with that data. So that must be, you know, I'm a little bit jealous. That must be a really cool part of your job to kind of just be able to see inside and solve really, you know, acute and potentially pervasive problems. I mean, along those lines, I would love you to sort of address some of the, like, I feel like HR sometimes has a bad reputation, right? Like, so like, how do you, I'd be curious, I got two questions along those lines. One's kind of internal, like, have you experienced friction with like existing HR practices and teams? Like people just wanting to do it the way we've always done it. We're old school. We don't want you, you know, young kids coming in here with your newfangled HR analytics tech product. Like we're not going to, like, have you run into any of that? And if so, how have you navigated?
Yeah, no, we run into that. It's to a large degree, a lot of HR is also very like, you know, people that have been in the role for 30 years, 40, and they're just like, this is the way I've done things. And I feel like they feel some of the new technology is almost a threat to their jobs. And no, it's not actually. We feel like it's to augment and help you do things better. But I think when people are stuck in their ways, and you know, there's a sense of importance about what they do, they don't want to change it. I mean, people are afraid of change. So we've run into some of those friction. People are like, I've had conversations with people like, yeah, like this is what you do. We connect your systems, it's automated, and then you know, we deliver this analytics and maybe it takes them hours to do it manually. They will rather just keep doing it manually because this is what we do and this is how we've done it, and they're used to it. But it's not necessarily a good use of your time because the other things that they keep it doing. So we've seen that. Like we've seen that multiple times. But it's starting to change. I mean, you have a lot of like very forward thinking leaders coming into the space, and a lot of times even from other domains too, coming in and challenging that status quo. I think we need to see more of that. And then you can see some other HR leaders that have been in HR too for a while, but I've been like, no, this cannot continue as well. And so for us, I think those forward thinking HR leaders should keep speaking out, should keep, you know, pushing the organizations to do better. But yeah, it does have a bad rep because you have leaders like that who've just been there for that long and just want things to keep going. However, like the truth of the matter is like things cannot keep going as this. Like the way people work has changed and you have to adapt or get left behind. It's just what it is, right? So right now we're at this point where ignorance is not an excuse anymore. You can't say I did not know because there's so many tools, there's so many resources available. So if you're saying, oh, we had an employee engagement issue or we had a compensation issue, but I didn't know because I was unwilling to bring in technology to help us uncover that, then that's on you as a leader. And you need to be proactive and say, no, we need to kind of make sure that things are right. The employee engagement and employee experience is correct, is right within the organization.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think you're framing it out in a really fascinating way in terms of like, it's a generational change piece. It's a technological change piece. Like we now have the tools to understand and even look at this data. But there's also kind of like the business case piece. You know, you mentioned that example of like that company that had that 45-day window between, you know, sort of the recruiter and getting connected to the hiring manager. That business is just going to like shed talent and dollars and, you know, just kind of not move as fast and frankly get churned out of the market because they're not solving for these HR issues. So I think that's a really fascinating element of what you do here is like you help these companies keep pace, if not move faster than their competition. Because that's what's forcing some of the change too, you know.
And absolutely,
that's fascinating.
It's interesting, right? Because yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head there. There's so many like, because if you see, I don't know if you've probably maybe spoken to some of those kind of large companies that are just stuck in a setting where doing. If you look at the processes, it's so slow, right? Like there's a lot of inefficiencies in the way they do things because of that, right? And so, and obviously. There's no telling how much in terms of talent that you're losing in terms of, I don't think that's a good way to run a business, right? There's so much you lose in that. There's so much you lose in that. And then, you know, something happens, for example, like that, like we've seen situations whereby people sue people for like employee engagement issues or compensation underpay, right? And then, oh, we didn't realize, well, if you actually took the data and ran the analysis, then you would have known where the issues were and then you could have fixed it before it led to something worse. And then next thing you know, you should have fixed, you could have fixed the pay issue that was worth $50,000. Next thing you know, you're paying $10, $15 million in court because of a, on, you know, and so how is that good for the business? Right. So anyways, yeah, totally.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, but yeah, that's, I guess another kind of HR having not a great rep conversation. How do you respond to this classic argument that you hear that, you know, quote unquote, HR is never on the side of the employee, but they're always on the side of the employer, right? Like this is something you always hear. It comes up a lot in, frankly, in, you know, DEI grievance cases, you know, around like pay equity and lots of things whenever there's an issue. So like, what have you seen that could potentially respond to that sort of classic argument against HR as it stands today?
Yeah, I mean, I can see why, right? Like, I mean, over the years, we've seen situations like that. Like, you know, that's the honest truth. Like we've seen it, right? But I think they're incredible companies and leaders that are challenging that are creating products that are, you know, conversations that are being had that are challenging that norm and saying, no, this is how it should be about the employee experience, right? Because here's the thing, right? If a company takes steps to make sure that the employees have good experience working for the organization, right? What ends up happening is like both sides win, the employee and the employee. Because the employee knows like the organization cares about me as an individual, cares about my values, we're aligned. They're gonna work their hardest. They're gonna put their heart and souls into what they do. And if they put their heart and souls into what they do, guess what? Company does well. That's what it is, right? So I think like HR should be on the side of fairness, period. That's what it is, right? And so the side of fairness means like the organization is doing what they need to do from an employee standpoint, make sure that they have the right policies, they have the right processes in place to make sure the employees have a good experience. And at the same time, supporting the employees in terms of what they need. Because if you have those two sides, then things work. So yeah, we've seen HR being on the other side of those bad cases. However, I think that is changing. I think companies right now, you can't go and act crazy. You'll be called out these days. Like you can't just like we see this CEO that fired like how many people through like Zoom call? Like he just got on Zoom call, like you're all gone. People that is crazy. You can't just do that. That's not a way to treat people. And so like these days, like people are demanding more, right? Like people can just leave if you're not people just leave and go find a new job. Like, and so at the end of the day, the most important resource in a business is the people. Companies have to figure out ways to treat people better. And I can see it's a lot better than it used to be, 100% for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. In a way, it's nice to see, you know, coming out of the pandemic, individuals advocating for themselves in terms of their pay, in terms of their hours, in terms of just like balance between integration, whatever we're calling it this week, you know, work-life integration, work-life balance. And then to see companies respond to that, because I think that's the sort of tension and the push-pull that should exist in the market ultimately, you know, and you could say what you will obviously about like labor rights and unions and things like that. You're seeing a lot of great stuff in that space as well. Curious to kind of, I want to wrap up this portion of the conversation, you know, specifically about HR tech. We look out over the HR tech landscape and we're seeing things like, you know, recruitment platforms for remote teams and cloud-based social intranet platforms. And, you know, look at a platform like WageStream that's all about, you know, financial well-being for frontline workers. You know, you look at something like Unmind, you know, which is a workplace mental health platform as well. You know, you look at Multiverse, platform for connecting apprentices to companies. We actually have an apprentice. I'd be curious, like, you know, what your predictions are about HR tech. Where is it headed based on what you've seen, you know, in the past few years, past few quarters? Just what should we be on the lookout for in the HR tech space?
You're gonna see more, more innovation in this space. Like I said earlier on, I think innovation expands before it contracts. So I think you're gonna see a lot more. And then you're gonna now start seeing like a lot of like, you know, collaborations and a lot of like, you know, bigger companies swallowing the smaller companies and, you know, just stuff like that, like those kind of things. Because again, like I think innovation comes from a place where someone sees a need and then they fulfill that.
Yeah. But are there any like specific elements, is there like a Web3 component to HR tech that we should be on the lookout for? Is there stuff around like cultural, like cross-cultural collaboration and like people being able to hire anywhere? Like, are there any specific, like, you know, spaces in HR tech that you should be like, hey, watch that space?
Yeah, I mean, I think more of it is going to be things around remote culture. There's going to be more of that, especially because, you know, like if you think about culture, it's one thing, let's say you're in a particular place, let's say you're hiring in the US, of what is a workplace culture now. Then you add the element of, okay, people are, there's now this remote piece of it. And then there's a remote piece whereby you're now hiring people in Japan, in Africa, in different parts of the world. Okay, what does that mean? Because the way people work in different parts of the world is a bit different, right? There's gonna be also a lot of that. You're gonna see more and more of that. So yeah, things around culture. There's always gonna be something around with hiring, right? I think one of the products that we use that I think is really interesting, and I want to see what kind of more what they do is Deel, right? And they've enabled us to kind of make it easy to hire someone in a different country, because like just the whole process that goes into it, because every country has its own laws and regulations and all these things and how you pay people, right? And so there's gonna be more things around that as companies hire more and more externally as well. I think it's gonna be like basically evolutions of some of the things that are already here, right? Things around culture, things around hiring. And then the big thing right now that no one has really figured out fully is things around pay, right? Because we have a great podcast actually coming out within our company that we talk about a bit about that. We have one of just a great friend of ours, Sam, who talks about just this whole thing about pay being, is it a cost of living versus a cost of labor calculation? And it's really interesting. And so, well, if you're hiring someone in Nigeria for a software engineering role, how much do you pay them compared to if you hire someone in New York, right? You know, some people are like, well, it's the same job, so pay them the exact same thing. Some are like, no, but they're in Nigeria, so it's different cost of living. Is it actually a cost of living? Is it cost of labor? So there's all these things in terms of how you pay people that makes it fair that we haven't quite figured out. And I think there's going to be more conversations and more products around that that's going to come out as well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to say around the pay conversation, and especially like when you're talking geography, and obviously there's like, you know, race, class, culture implications and all that. So I think there's lots to say there. Cool. Well, let's pivot a little bit and jump into our lightning round. I'll give you about, you know, maybe a minute to answer each of these questions. They're just kind of like fun personal questions we like to ask every guest to kind of get to know you as an individual better, but it does connect to sort of the tech space as well. First question, just be curious, like what's the tech stack that you work with, and what's been a sort of a game-changing tech product in your life as a co-founder?
I mean, we work with like the Snowflakes of the world, you know, AWS, Snowflake, DBT, right? Like we, you know, those are some of the tools we work with. Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, like one of the things that I really like personally as a founder, because like, you know, I do a lot of the kind of the sales, the business development. I love Notion. I don't know, you know, and so we use it for a lot of things, right? Like notes, like that's my to-dos, everything is on there. So I don't know what I would do without it. So Notion has been an incredible game-changing tool for me, I would say.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Notion, because I just got off a call with our HR team being like, okay, how do we get all this great stuff you made for us into Notion, you know, and like just kind of pushing them to like, you know, because for me as a founder, it's like, I need to systematize and operationalize this stuff for my team, and having a Notion page that I can refer people to that's like, look, here's a thing you can go through. Here's a thing you can read, versus like, yeah, I think there's some HR doc in some folder somewhere on Google Drive that you can reference. Like, it's just, it's all about knowledge management at the end of the day to some extent. So to really empower people. So glad you mentioned Notion. Shout out to Notion. They're not our sponsor, but we hope they will be one day.
That'd be great.
Along those same lines, you know, tech has its limitations. So what would you say is a problem that tech cannot solve for us, and why?
Empathy. I think empathy is something that comes from within. I think a lot of tech is something that external, right? I think empathy, you know, I think if a lot of times it's just like things, maybe how we are raised or how we experience the world and things like that. And so for me, I was taught at the young age, and I don't know, something innate with me in terms of seeing someone else's situation and thinking about that and seeing the person as a person, right? And I've seen people that maybe don't have that. And is there a way that could be? Yes. I mean, there are different ways, right? From conversations with people that do therapy, like there's so many things you can think about, like how to kind of help you care more about people. Yeah. There's a lot of things that tech helps, right? Like, oh, like you have meditation apps to help you with things, or you have this and that. But I think tech can help empathy. I think that comes from person to person interactions and just listening. I think that's kind of how people can develop that sense of that.
Yeah. Yeah, just to be clear, there's no right or wrong answers for these, but also I generally agree with that, but I keep banging the drum about like VR and AR, like the potential for them to, you know, if you put a man in the shoes of a woman who has to like walk around a city and catcalled all day, like does that have a potential to build empathy and spur them into action, for example, to address that issue, or at least not do it themselves anymore?
Yeah, it could. I mean, that's horrible. I saw a video of that. I was like, this is horrific. Like when I saw that, just walking through, I was like, oh my gosh, like how many times that she was getting caught? I was like, oh my, that's a good one.
And that wasn't even VR. That was just a YouTube clip, right? So like, I think there's potential there. And I think it's a shame that we haven't even begun to start to unlock that, because I think there's lots there. Along those same lines, tech for bad. We like to talk about tech for good, but also tech for bad. What's the evilest application of tech that you've seen out in the world there?
I mean, there's some that are just pretty, you know, crazy, right? Like, you know, the kidnapping kids, all those things, like kind of like, you know, using technology for that, right? To lure kids into, like, you've seen those kind of things, right? So I don't even want to go into that, but yeah, like if, yeah, we had something within our family recently that had to do with kidnapping, and that was through tech, using that to track and then kidnap. So you've seen that happen, but not to even go into that, even that sinister, because it was just like a bad experience. But you see even things that people don't realize that, you know, just like negligence, whereby it's like, for example, you know, you had these engineers that wrote an algorithm to hire, and then the algorithm was only picking men because they just didn't realize that you have to test and just see. But just things like that, and then, like, you know, people are not getting jobs because the algorithm was just like, so I don't know. I feel like when we build things, I think people need to, I think that this goes into a whole conversation about like having diversity when it comes to even just building products, having different people look at things and test, because that helps inform a world. Like the world is made up of different people. If only it's people are making technology, there is a chance that it's going to be in their image.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of the phrase garbage in, garbage out. Yeah. And if you frankly, like, let's just get real, 2022, if you have an undiverse, you know, homogenous room of people building something, like, that's kind of garbage in, and you're going to get garbage out the other end. And I think we need to say that more and practice not doing that more. So that's just kind of, yeah, that's my hot take.
Yeah, no, it's you need that diversity. You need more thought that goes into making products. I mean, look at the social media pandemic, right? Like things with social media right now. A lot of times, I don't think a lot of, they thought through what the consequences will be after in terms of how people see themselves, like people's mental health and things like that, right? So I think there has to be more conversations. There has to be more thought when that goes into making technology. But yeah, it's just so many things you can go through, from things that are really bad to things that are just like quite like, oh, this is terrible, right? But it just goes about, we just need to think more about things before
we build it. And we see it in the creative space too. Like, I mean, I go to these meetings and I'm the speck of pepper in a sea of salt among agency owners and stuff like that. And I consciously make an effort to build a diverse team. And I just know, because I see it, that our team produces more creative, more interesting work content specifically for our clients, because our team is, you know, incredibly diverse. And that's something we just have chosen to hang our hats on as a company, as an agency. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear, like, you're a founder, you're probably bubbling over with ideas all the time. And you're like me, it's like hard to like limit them and just focus sometimes. Be curious if you could dream up a new tech product other than Equitable, what would it be and what problem would it solve, and for whom?
Oh, wow. So you want me to give my next company we're going to build? Nah, I'm just...
Yeah, reveal it. Reveal it right now. This is the time.
That's interesting. I mean, I think one of the ones that I've thinking about, I was like, that could be really cool. And if anyone takes this idea, you know, just credit me and send me some equity. Right now in Africa, there is a lot of, so in the US, in UK, you have like database with people's information, like, you know, in terms of like, if you're trying to do background checks, right, you can easily do background checks. I know, like, right now in Africa and West Africa, if people are trying to find new jobs, there isn't quite a way to do that quite well. People have to go call your old, like, there isn't quite a way to kind of track that or do like real good background checks. And so, and this goes back to helping people feel, you know, helping companies make sure they hire the right people, safety and things like that. Yeah, I would say some more things around background checks for the African market is something that I thought could be really cool, because that would help a lot of people, give a lot of companies, a lot of individuals peace of mind as well.
That's a great example. Yeah, one of our clients, Chipper Cash, they you know, the sort of like the transfer wide, the growing unicorn transfer wise of Africa, like, I feel like that's something they could definitely use as they move into crypto and stocks and things like that. I'm sure they've already solved for it. Last question, we like to ask this of everyone in the tech for good space. What's worked well for you in terms of building a career in tech that balances both profit and purpose? How do you manage those two?
Not thinking about profit. That's how I balance. This is something I've seen throughout. Like, if you provide value, you're going to get paid. So why think about that? Just focus on providing value, right? So someone says, let's see someone that's made $100 million. They probably provided $100 million worth of value to someone, to a large amount of people. Yeah, I don't think they probably went into that thinking of, I'm sure some people do, but so the way we think about it is just like, we see a problem, let's solve the problem for as many people as possible. Frankly, if you do that, then people are going to pay for it. So why worry about getting paid? Just worry about solving the problem. And so that's kind of how we think we do it, right? I know it might sound a bit idealistic, but honestly, that's really how we think about it, right? It's just like, solve the problem, you get paid. Don't worry about getting paid.
I love the problem focus. And yeah, I think that's one of the most interesting part of our jobs in the spaces. Like, people come to us with the growth balance, you know, and it's connected to their brand and their identity as individuals. And we get to think and write and be creative every day to help them solve it. And honestly, it's like one of the best jobs in the world. You know, similar in the tech space for founders, you see all these companies with specific HR problems and company-wide problems, and you're trying to help them solve it. So, well, I think that's a great place to end. Joseph Ifeigbu, co-founder and CEO of Equitable, it's been a pleasure to have you on Tech Can't Save Us, talking about all things HR tech landscape.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
Thanks, Joseph.